Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Super Podcast. I am your host, Super Marcy, and we are back to discuss the Star Wars prequels. And as per the previous episode, I am joined by Darth Christopher.
Hello there.
Hello there.
I sound strangely like Ewan McGregor.
Strangely. And we are also joined by Bede the Hutt.
Oh, 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 oh. Hello there, Damasi.
That's disturbing, Bede.
I know. I'm doing my very best as... I think I'm slowly turning... After sort of like rewatching the Star Wars films, Marcy, I think I'm slowly turning into Jabba the Hutt. I'm just saying.
Roger.
And somebody agrees with me with that, so...
Yeah.
Those battle droids are smart.
Not really, but anyway.
Poor guys, they get a more bum rap than stormtroopers.
Yeah. So yes, we are here to discuss The Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith. I was almost going to say Revenge of the Fallen. That's not right.
Wrong movie, Marcy.
Wrong movie. We'll kick it off with episode one, The Phantom Menace. Let's give my own little background to this. I was like beyond excited for episode one. Back in the days of dial-up internet and slow internet access, trying to watch that trailer, like, constantly was quite a task. And I remember getting to see it on the big screen with John Carpenter's Vampires. And I remember there was, like, a couple of people in the cinema that walked out just after the trailer because that's all they wanted to see. So, you know, that was pretty exciting. I was collecting, like, cards and all sorts of stuff just in preparation for the movie. And I remember just, like, being second in line for that night that it had come out. And we were only second in line because in front of us was a guy dressed in a very, like, authentic Darth Maul costume. And he'd already seen it at midnight and he was telling us, like, how awesome it was. I was really excited, and I think I cheered when we had the Lucas Arts logo come on. And, you know, as I saw it, I thought it was awesome. I couldn't get enough of it. I was still, you know, so obsessed after having seen it. And it wasn't until maybe a few years ago that I actually realized people really hated the movie and they hated Jar Jar and all these problems. And whereas my real issues then, I just felt like the continuity was really off. But it didn't really bother me because I thought it was so awesome. Like, I think I taped behind the scenes specials on TV and I'd watch them like 10 times a day because I was that excited for it. And back then I wasn't disappointed, but now I think my disappointment with it lies more in the what could have been and my own ideas for how I think they should have done it. But if I put all that aside, for me, it's a movie I can just sit, watch and enjoy. I don't think Jar Jar's the worst character ever. Believe me, Michael Bay has created worse. I'm not taking shots at you, Michael Bay.
Shia LaBeouf being one of them.
Poor Shia LaBeouf.
Fictional character he'd be.
But continue,
Mud
Marcy.
Flaps and skid marks or whatever the fuck those stupid things are called.
They become strangely less annoying as you watch the film, but then you wouldn't know that because you don't
watch it. I don't want to watch it.
Yeah.
It's got humping robots, it's got robot testicles, it's got John Turturro's butt. Yeah. All those things make Jar Jar look awesome. But no, for me, I just think he's that character that's more for the little kids. And it's like when I watched it with Lily, she loved it. She loved him. It's definitely more a Star Wars movie for the kids, except it's got politics and shit in it, which is like, even now I'm like, I don't fucking know what this Trade Federation wants to do.
If you want a perfect reaction to someone, you know, on the whole political side, to the Phantom Menace, the Simpsons did that perfectly with their rip of Cosmic Moors, the Gathering Shadow, when Bart and Lisa are at the cinema and Bart's like, tax exempt? What is this? And Lisa's like, oh, don't worry, I'm sure this is getting passed away to all the pew, 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 boom, boom, boom. And sadly, it's a perfect rip. And then especially their own George Lucas, and that was quite
funny. Yeah, so, I mean, we can get to, like, my own ideas of how I think what the movie should have been, but I have fun with it. It's fun to watch with like, Lily, who quite enjoys it, you know, forgetting about the tax and whatever, the Trade Federation crap. You know, something that's really enjoyable. Jar Jar's, you know, he's the Chris of Star Wars.
Huh?
Yeah. So I still really enjoy it. And at the time, I was not disappointed. It lived up to my expectations. I was obsessed. I had to get the video as soon as it came out. And I watched it all the time. We'll go over to Chris.
I can't remember distinctly when I discovered that the Phantom Menace existed. It probably would have been soon after the special editions came out in 97, and they were doing all of the behind the scenes look at the creation of the original trilogy. And, you know, again, I can't pinpoint the exact moment when I knew this film existed, but all of a sudden there were posters and there were trailers, and I think I only saw the trailer once at the cinema. But for me, a lot of it was what on TV, you know, because my mum was obsessed with watching the Today Show back in the day, and that's when it was good. So they had behind the scene looks, little snippet trailers, and I felt like I was a kid back in 77. You know, I had no idea what this film was going to be or what it was going to be about. You know, yeah, you know, by this stage we know what Star Wars is. You know. We know this is going to explain some of the backstory of, you know, characters like Anakin and Obi-Wan and the days before the Empire. And my distinct image, particularly of the trailer was, and the poster as well, actually, was...
I loved the poster that had Anakin with the shadow of Darth Vader.
Yeah, that one, but the main poster itself, particularly... in the right, dominate in the poster is Darth Maul's eyes. And I was obsessed in the trailer. My favorite image was the shot after his duel with Qui-Gon on Tatooine, and he's there and he's lowering his blade. And I'm like, oh my God, who's this guy in black? Who's this guy in the hood? You know, he's got a really cool looking lightsaber and this and that. And by the time the toys hit Kmart again, you know, I don't know if it was very early 99 or because the film hit Australia in June of 99 from memory. And I just didn't care. I was just like so befuddled by like, oh, who are these characters? Who are these, you know? And I just grabbed the Darth Maul one, you know, not knowing anything about who Darth Maul was, just the fact that he had a wicked looking lightsaber and he was one badass looking motherfucker. Like, you know, the horns and the red and the black. And it's like, oh my God, this guy is so cool. And pretty sure it was the opening weekend we saw it. We're at the Armadale Cinema, and I was in line. I was second in line. Like, this was back in Armadale. Nobody really did the camp-out thing, you know, country, rural town. But I had my little Darth. I think this was also the first time I took a toy to the cinema with me. And I had my little Darth Maul action figure, and I'm talking to the family in front of me, and, you know, they're just amazed that with so much little information that I had gathered about this film. Again, you know, I know as much about The Phantom Menace before its release as I do about now as The Force Awakens. You know, I've got my own ideas and all theories. And, you know, I mean, it's at a stage where Star Wars exists in this world already. but still, it's so much of a mystery. And I sat there and I watched it, and the whole time through, I'm sitting there going, "Oh my God, I can't believe I'm watching the very first, you know, chronological, or you know, the episode one in the Star Wars saga." And I loved it. I saw it 4 times at the cinema. I just thought it was fantastic. It still remains fantastic in my mind today. And like Marcy said, I think it was just around the time when Attack of the Clones was coming out. I didn't realize that people didn't like this movie, and that it was people really, really hated it, and particularly Jar Jar. And I'm sitting there going, you know, what? People hate this? People hate Star Wars? And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm discovering all the other things that people hated about, you know, not just that film, but the franchise in a whole. It's like, wait, people hated 3PO at one stage? The Ewoks? Really? And now Jar Jar? And it's like, Jar Jar's a lovable, goofy character like myself. And I just think it just really hurted me. And that's when I really discovered, too, that lots of fanboys could be very, very harsh on their own franchises, because it was around that time, too, I discovered that people hated the 98 Godzilla. And I'm like, really?
I watched that, I really didn't like it.
I was a dumb kid back then.
I was 13, I'm like, this is shit. A year later, episode one, I'm like, this is fucking awesome.
But look, episode one won me over. I mean, you know, with the Pizza Hut deals that was going on, because we went straight out and had Pizza Hut and got the cups and everything. And so, again, like I said, for me, it felt like I was a kid back in 77 experiencing this for the first time, despite the fact that Star Wars already exists. But it was just, and even today, I mean, look, my problems with the film now, I like what Marcy said, you know, what could have been. And even this year, on May the 4th, when we were just rewatching all 6 just for the day, I did sit there and I actually thought to myself, oh, well, if George Lucas had come up to me and said, hey, Chris, I want you to direct Star Wars, and, you know, what I would have done. And I sat there and I kind of crafted out my own just for the trilogy, and it could have gone some different ways. But look, I still love it for what it is, and I think people need to calm down. And this is something that I discovered a lot sooner than most people, because they're really only saying this about this now with the prequels, that George Lucas never wanted to direct them. Back in the mid to late 80s, after Jedi, he had discussed doing either a sequel to the original films or a prequel. And he actually started to talk with the Return of the Jedi director, Richard Marquand, about the possibility of directing the prequels. Sadly, Marquand passed away in 89, and that never happened. And George asked, you know, he asked people like Bob Zemeckis, Ron Howard, and even Spielberg, who he'd asked in the past on the original films as well. And they all said no. And it kind of mirrors what's happened today with people, George asking people to do The Force Awakens. And, you know, it took JJ 2 turns before he actually accepted. And it's just such a shame that these guys, you know, were being offered by one of their best friends the chance to take on, you know, the next chapter in the Star Wars saga. And they just couldn't, they didn't feel as if they were up to the task. And they're 3 very talented directors that would have done great. I mean, Ron Howard or Bob Zemeckis would have been fantastic. And I mean, my only other gripe with the film, even as a 12-year-old boy watching this film, it was those little continuity errors that you could kind of pick up. And I'm like, oh, hang on, this is kind of not mentioned in that one. But it was just tiny gripey things that I didn't like. But I loved it then, I love it now, and it is a film for kids. It really is a kid film. You know, it's still PG. You know, you got Jar Jar in there being his goofy little self, and kids love him. A lot of kids do like Jar Jar for just being so wacky. And I mean, the lightsaber duels in it. You know, once you get past all of the
chipset. This was a really, like, the first time we saw like an insane lightsaber battles. Yeah. And oh my god, when you see that,
that's what really won me.
And the soundtrack, the score is amazing.
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off, that's Chris. Right. You looked very frustrated.
That's where I was getting to, but thank you. the 2-on-1 lightsaber duel, like I've never seen anything like that in film up to that station. I'd seen some pretty wacky stuff as a kid. But the fact that there was, you know, 4 blades and 3 fighters basically going was nuts. And people forget to give credit where credit's due. This film had one of the best soundtracks of some of the Star Wars films, because the Duel of the Fates, and this is what I loved about the prequels. People kind of forget this about the other ones, the original films, because they each have their own theme, but there's kind of two in each of them. Like, you know, there's a Luke and Leia theme, but also the Yoda theme. And, you know, there's kind of a couple of themes for each of the characters. But the prequels had a single iconic theme for each of the films. And Duel of the Fates for The Phantom Menace was, just so good. So, so good. But, you know, I just love this film to bits. I mean, again, regardless of all the chit-chatty. And this is the closest we also got to seeing, regardless of all the script rewrites, which Carrie Fisher helped out, you know, it still had a lot of clunky dialogue. That as a kid, I didn't mind. I still don't mind it today, but it's still like, yep, come on. But it's not the worst film ever made. It's not the greatest film ever made, but it's not the worst. And I think people need to calm down on it and give it a little bit more credit, because it had the opportunity to be special. Yeah, maybe it didn't live to people's expectations, but you know what? Get over it and just enjoy it for what it is. It's like what I said the other week. You know, a true Star Wars fan will just enjoy it, go along with the ride. You have your own little gripes, but don't go full on hating it. But no, that 99 was a very special time for me to be experiencing that. And it was fantastic.
Bede.
Yes. Pretty much like in a lot of ways when this movie was coming out, I was really excited because I remember the original trilogy was coming out, I think 2 years prior, because they had the special edition versions. And I didn't even realize until probably after when they were released that they were making a new Star Wars movie. So I was just absolutely excited. And I, like you, Marcy, I remember they had like this making of on TV one night just before the release of Phantom Menace. And I believe I actually did tape it, and I have it on one of my old VHS tapes around here somewhere. So I think I watched that a whole bunch of times. And I do remember seeing this because it did play, because back in my old hometown, we did have a cinema. So it did eventually play there. And I think, I don't know how many times I did see it in the cinema. I think maybe once, maybe twice overall. And I remember really liking it a lot then. And it wasn't until, it was funny though, because you and Chris kind of didn't realize until a few years later that that you didn't know that there were people out there who didn't like the movie. I actually found out pretty much right away, really, because I sort of at that time during that, from 97 to 99, I was sort of really getting into movies and all that. And I was like looking at like what was, you know, in terms of box office and like, you know, the awards and stuff like that. And then when I found, but one of the things I found out first was like, is when I found out that The Phantom Menace was nominated for Worst Picture at the Razzies. And I was like, what? Like, huh? And I'm like, nah, there's got to be a mistake. That's what I assumed at first. And then I was watching an episode of the pretty awesome but very short-lived animated series, Clerks, the animated series, and they mentioned that on that show during a quick scene how Randall sort of brings George Lucas into trial and pretty much said, accuses him of making a bad movie with The Phantom Menace. And I'm like, oh, okay, I didn't. And then, of course, but I kind of shrugged it off at the time and all that. So eventually I got the VHS and all that and watched it at home. And I kind of was realizing when I was kind of rewatching the films over the past week, particularly with the prequels, that I hadn't seen The Phantom Menace probably in 14 years, because I remember 2001 was the last time I actually watched it, and I'm thinking to myself, like, how, like, having known all, like, the sort of the hate and everything that this film has generated over the years, I thought to myself, it would be interesting to see how I feel about it now, and having kind of rewatched it yesterday, I'm just gonna put it out there. I do agree with both of you. I do think this movie, I'm not going to say it's a good movie, but I don't think it's as bad as everyone makes it out to be. And in fact, I would say it's a bit overhated. Like, that's not a real word, but that's a term.
I think people just hate on it to be cool half the time.
Pretty much. Like, it's not to say it doesn't have its flaws. And watching and thinking, oh, yeah, I can see why this doesn't work or that doesn't work. I know you two didn't mind Jar Jar Binks, but I didn't hate him, but I did find him pretty annoying. I did find him a bit.
Say that to anyone.
Yeah, I know. I understand that, but I don't know. He did get on my nerves on occasion, and I think the reason for that is I don't mind goofy humor, and you know that in the original films there was a lot of that, sort of funny sight gags and all that. But I did feel with Jar Jar. And probably why a lot of people don't like him and why I found him a bit annoying as well, was I think some of his hijinks became a little too much and a little too...
It does get a little too much.
Yeah. And
The thing is, I would rather put up with Jar Jar hijinks than, you know, diarrhea humor in movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck off with that shit.
Yeah, I agree with that. I 100% agree with that. And I do realize, like, even then that you know, this film was... You know, had Lucas was kind of real when he was making the film. This film was made for kids, like, and people seem to forget that because you got to remember when the original trilogy came out, a lot of the first fans who saw that were probably kids themselves, and by the time this new one came out, they were, you know, full on adults. So this
and that's where a lot of the hate comes from. It's those people that watch the originals as young kids.
Yeah.
When they were released at the cinema.
Yeah.
And they just felt like they'd been owed something when they hadn't been. And it's like, come on, guys, all of these films are for the next gen, you know. So the prequels were meant to be for the next generation of fans and filmmakers. It didn't really get the chance to be the next generation for filmmakers because George ended up doing them all.
Yeah.
Out of obligation because nobody would do it. And he's like, look, if I'm going to get these done, I've got to do them.
Yeah.
But it did kind of make it with the fans because then it had the life after it with TV shows and whatnot.
Yeah.
And now it's doing that again with The Force Awakens, you know, which is more closer than, you know, the big gap that happened between the originals and the prequels. But yeah.
Yeah. And like, it's not to say, like I say, it does have its flaws and I do like it. And I will say it is probably my least favorite Star Wars film, but I don't think it's, like I said, I don't think it's a bad film at all. Like, there are things I did like about it. I think visually the film does look really great. And like it, and I love the sort of the world building of the film. And also, I also did like the lightsaber battle, also just fantastic. And some of the action set pieces are really cool. And also, even though, yeah, some of the acting did come across as rather wooden, but there were some actors who did shine. Like, of course, you know, Liam Neeson, who brings sort of gravitas to the role of Qui-Gon Jinn. And also, Ewan McGregor was just perfectly cast to play a young Obi-Wan Kenobi. And to me, and also it does feel like it sort of captures in a way the tone of the very first Star Wars film, like that sort of sense of adventure and fun and all that. And of course, but that being said, though, it does have its flaws. Like, some of the dialogue's a bit clunky, and like I say, some of the performances are a bit wooden, particularly like, you know, Natalie Portman, and also was it Pramila August who plays Anakin Skywalker's mom? I felt she was rather wooden. And of course,
there were a lot of great actors that weren't given some great time. I mean, look, they did the best with what they could
do.
But like, Liam Neeson really leads this film. And it's a shame he was only in the one. But it, again, you know, that's what I love about Star Wars. Is you get some characters like Qui-Gon and Darth Maul, and they only last the one.
Yeah.
I don't subscribe to that theory that, you know, they continued in the Clone Wars that, that Darth Maul survived his duel. I mean, I like to know that he died because, to be honest, what they did with that was very, very silly. I mean, I didn't really watch much of the Clone Wars because of that. I mean, I'll get onto that a bit later, but, you know, they were only in it the one. And I think at that time I really only knew Liam Neeson for Rob Roy. And to know that he was in that because of that sword fight, particularly because of that sword fight, because his skill with the blade was that great. And I think I watched the last time I watched Rob Roy after seeing the the last time I watched Rob Roy after seeing The Phantom Menace, I'm watching that final sword fight, and he does, he's got his sword up, and he grabs, he doesn't grab the full blade because the type of sword he uses, he can't get a two-hand grip, but he grabs his wrist, and I sat there and I go, ah, he's doing it. He's doing the Qui-Gon thing. That's why he was cast, because he's doing the Qui-Gon thing.
It's because Liam Neeson has a particular set of skills. That's why he got cast in the movie.
That's why he does it. He's not only, well, he writes lists.
Well, But, okay, that was an awkward joke. But anyways, let's move right along.
Let's move right along because...
Oh, I did have one more thing to say before we move on to the next film, though.
Well, I still have something to say, but you go first.
I was going
to
say, I want to bring up Jake Lloyd. Now, here's the thing. I have two friends of mine in this. I don't think he was the greatest in the film. And I can understand why people didn't like his performance, because I don't think it's the performance is bad. I think it's how...
It's the dialogue and what he's given to.
Yeah, and I think
people
also...
People have got to remember, child actors, look, no matter what you're making, it's very rare to get a very good performance out of a child. You know, like, there are the cases of, like, your Jerry Maguire's, your Jurassic Parks, your Empire of the Sun, your Leon, where you can get great performances out of a very young person. But again, this wasn't one of those. And Ewan McGregor told a very good story about the making of Attack of the Clones with the guy who played, the kid who played young Boba Fett. About, you know, George basically didn't give him any directing style. And it shows in the final product once you hear that story. And it's kind of the same with Jack Lloyd. You know, I mean, he, under better instruction, he could have. But again, with directing... kids, it's very, very hard.
Yeah, I know that.
No matter what, if it was somebody else or whatnot, it just, yeah, it would be difficult.
Well, exactly. I mean, a kid's not going to, like, ask questions, the type of, you know, acting-related questions that an older actor is going to ask. Like, what's my character? What's my motivation? Yeah. And stuff like that.
He was just excited, because I remember a behind-the-scenes thing. He was just like, holy shit, I'm playing Anakin Skywalker! That's all he cared about.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I completely agree. And but the thing is, why I want to go on a bit of a rant, and it's very rare I do this. I want to say, like, I'll just say this. Like, if you're not a fan of Jake Lloyd's performance, I understand that. Like I said, he's not the greatest, but he's not bad either. But I want to say, fuck all the fanboys who pretty much ruined this poor kid's life.
Yeah.
Pretty much. I'm giving them all the middle finger right now because, I mean, seriously, guys, he's a kid. The way that some of these fanboys have acted towards him, you'd think he was, like, the worst thing that ever happened to society. I mean, like you guys said, he's just a kid. Like, you know, sometimes the kid actors aren't the greatest, but the way that a lot of fanboys treated him then... was just disgusting, in my opinion. And in some ways it is, because pretty much Jake Lloyd's life was pretty much...
Yeah, he was bullied at school so badly. And, you know, there's a reason why he stopped acting. And, you know, all of this still affects him now. And I know that...
Even with his recent arrest, if that's because
he's been... But I know that he's, you know, done conventions and he's actually met people that have been really, really nice. So I think it's nice that he's actually gotten to have that. Mm. But at the time, and still with people giving him shit, like, get a fucking life, you douchebag.
And I would also like to say to all the fanboys out there, and I've been saying this so many times to a lot of people that have so much hate for the prequels. It's like, and anyone that knows me will know, and I mentioned this last week as well, you know, when I said, look, guys, if you can't accept Star Wars for Star Wars, then, you know, go fuck yourself. But go fuck yourself, you fanboys that have really teared a new asshole on not only this film, but, you know, Jake Lloyd and Ahmed Best as well for playing Jar Jar. You know, fuck you all. you're not fans in my books. You're just haters.
Yeah.
And on that topic, we shall move along to something more joyous. Well, after.
Well, I had something I wanted to say.
Yeah.
In terms of how I would have done episode one, I actually wouldn't have gone. I probably would have said it as far back as it is, but instead of him being a kid, I would have had him be in his teens.
Already, yeah.
And we would have seen the character that was talked about in, like, A New Hope.
Hmm.
Whereas, you know, him with those discussions and stuff with his brother or adoptive brother, however you want to say it, with Owen.
I mean, there's ways they could have worked that around.
I would have found that a lot more interesting, and then him meeting, you know, the woman and stuff. But I don't think, like, having the Empire sort of really forming through the prequels, I don't think that works. I think it should have been established way before then. But that's how I would have handled it. And I can understand where Lucas was coming from in terms of how he was writing it. And I think in the back of his mind, he's wanting to appeal to everyone, but I think he really needed someone else to have taken his ideas and sort of crafted it with him. Like, if I was there, you know, that's how I would have done it. I would have looked back on what has been said in the previous movies and worked the movie to that. That's how I would have done it.
But see, the other issue, again, just before moving along, the big issue with these prequels was he didn't focus on a character's journey. It was, here's a bunch of characters, this is their names, let's go with it. So it wasn't, you know, instead of having one wise Jedi, we had a bunch of Jedi, and it was like, oh, okay. You know, we had a whole mix of characters. We didn't really have a main ship of sorts, you know. There wasn't the lovable band of rogues that we had in the original films. So there wasn't a sense of character journey. It was more just like, okay, we're going to get from here to here. Let's just roll with it. And again, you know, Marcy just basically almost described my version of it, which I think she stole from me when we...
No, it's how I've always thought it should be.
Because that's how, you know, you got to show him a little bit older and... But yeah, so that's the main thing. It's just there was no band of...
I think he needed a lot of a team. And I think I would have had that the focus. And I know that he's tried to have Anakin and Luke stories mirrored through those, but I definitely would have gone about it a different way. But that's me personally. But yeah, we can move on to the second one.
Attack of the Clones. Not the original title, but...
B, do you want to take us... Do you want to start with your thoughts and experiences with this movie?
Well, again, I was excited because, you know, it's Star Wars and whatnot. And I actually saw this film when I was over in the US on a holiday. So I was really excited. I saw it with my cousin. Yes, the same cousin I've mentioned many, many times in the past on previous episodes, for any of those out there who are wondering. And no, nothing happened. I'm just saying that right now.
I'm glad you have to clarify.
Yes, because people out there, i.e. matches, have dirty minds. So I have to clarify to... all our listeners. And also my uncle was there as well. So we went and saw the film. And
as long as he wasn't like Uncle Frank from Home Alone.
Oh, definitely not. No way. No. No Uncle Frank's in this cinema. But yeah, I mean, at the time, because like I was over there and I was my cousin's also is a fan of Star Wars, so we were very excited to see it. And I had a really good time with it at the time. And again, like I hadn't seen it. I did watch it a few more times after that, probably not in the cinema, but I think on when it came out on DVD and all that, and I kind of rewatched it again recently, like, to see how it, you know, holds up, you know, like, again, and it's interesting, kind of, like, a lot of people I've read, sort of, a lot of people considered this the very worst, like, the worst Star Wars film, and I kind of watched it, and again, just like Phantom Menace, it does have a lot of flaws. And I'll get to soon, but I do think it's a step up from Phantom Menace. Well, Phantom Menace was definitely a fun sort of film, This one definitely is sort of going into sort of the more the darker areas of the series, and I particularly like the sort of the it's definitely the more politically charged one as well, because it sort of like has this kind of like conspiracy at the center of it, and it's Obi-Wan and Anakin trying to sort of solve it. And at when I sort of saw it at I mean when I first watched it first time, I did find it a bit confusing back when I first watched it, because it's such an intricate kind of plot in a lot of ways. But when I rewatched it, the other day, with being much more gro now as a 31-year-old guy, and I was like, oh yeah, this is not as confusing as I remembered it being. It's actually pretty easy to follow, and if anything, it kind of maybe appreciate the film a lot more. That being said, though, it does have its flaws. Like, again, some of the clunky dialogue is there, and of the prequels, this one definitely has the more sort of wooden performances, and particularly sort of the love story subplot between Anakin and Padme. And I don't blame like Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman. I just feel like with their subplot, a lot of the sort of the dialogue,
Well, it's what they're given to work with.
yeah.
And with that dialogue, I mean, not even the world's greatest actor could really do a lot with that,
Not even Daniel
honestly.
Day-Lewis could make that believable. And you can definitely tell that, because I'm sort of looking back on like a lot of the films that George Lucas has, directed and well, not just written but directed. He's never really had a film what had a romance in it. So I think this is all pretty much like, new ground for him, and you can sort of sell that it just sort of comes off very awkward in the way how it's directed. And
I beg to differ on that. Go back and watch American Graffiti, my furry friend.
yeah, but that's
But
modern. It's like
that's a different one.
yeah,
But
that's
still,
a different one. Yeah,
it's then again, he did have two other writers with that
yeah,
one, but
exactly.
still,
Yeah,
yeah.
exactly. But I meant sort of, well, he did co-write this one with somebody else, but I mean, sort of in the, to me, it's that kind of subplot which felt very clunky to me, and kind of sort of brought the film down to me. But once it's sort of, they go, Anakin and Padme go to Tatooine, that's where that subplot actually got better. And also, like, yeah, sort of Hayden Christensen's lines delivery can be rather wooden at times, but what he sort of like, but he did get a bit better as the film came on. But to be honest, but when we get to the next film, I could definitely see a much bigger improvement when it came to the first film. But in terms of positives, I think visually, once again, the film looks great, and the sort of the visual effects just still hold up really well, surprisingly.
I mean, that stuff there you can't really fault because it's just done really well.
Yeah. And also, like, the action is really good, and there's a lot of pretty good humor in there. I particularly, one of my favorite bits is the scene when they're in the club, and that guy comes up to Annie, I mean, Obi-Wan, is like, "You want to buy some Death Sticks?" And Obi-Wan's like, "No, I don't want to buy some." "Oh, you don't want to buy some Death Sticks. You need to go home and rethink your." "I need to go home and rethink my life." I love that little bit. And also.
And side note, the guy that played him, he used to be in Home and Away and was one of my like earliest
And
crushes.
he was Mouse in the Matrix.
And I actually, when I interviewed him, I told him that.
But he was also
He
Mouse
was
in.
very flattered,
He
so
was
yeah.
also Mouse in
He
the
was, and I told him all about my love for that character.
Matrix. But and also two more things before I finish up is, I love, like, since the film was shot in Australia, like, I love seeing like Aussie actors sort of like appearing throughout in small parts. You had like Jack Thompson, Joel Edgerton, Rose Byrne. And all,
Order.
yeah, Susie Porter, Leanna Walsman, Matt Dorn, as you said before, Marcy, and just like little bit parts here and there, which I thought was really cool. And you could also say this is a movie is like a precursor to Jay Gottigan, because Joel Edgerton, Natalie Portman, and Ewan McGregor are in this film. But also, one of the things I really loved, and this made me cheer in my seat, is the lightsaber battle between Yoda and Count Dooku. And as soon as I like shrieked in, I pretty much squealed like a little girl when Yoda kind of brought out his lightsaber, and he,
Everyone in the cinema applauded. Like,
I
there were
applauded
times
too.
I
It was
saw
like
it.
that was like one of the best moments of my entire life when I was
Yeah.
And it's probably still one of my favorite film moments ever when that, because you think, oh, Yoda, he's just a little green guy, you know, he's old. I mean, we know he's a great Jedi Master, but what is he like as a warrior? And we got to fucking see that in this movie.
But 20 years later, he couldn't, you know.
It took a lot out of him when he had to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Know? And, of course, you know, it has Christopher Lloyd, RIP. So you can't go wrong with having Christopher Lee.
No, you said Lloyd.
Sorry, my bad. Christopher Lee in your film, RIP. So, yeah. But, yeah, that's. So overall, I enjoyed it. Like, it is a very flawed film, but you know, I enjoyed it. So,
yeah, I saw this opening night, and then the very next day, and then like the week after, I was obsessed with this one. But then again, I was obsessed with Hayden Christensen at the time. And it wasn't until later that I kind of, you know, when watching it, realizing that, his performance just wasn't that good, and it's not him, because when he's trying to deliver that dialogue, it's like, yeah, nah. You know, he's a really good actor, but he needs stuff to work with, and here he just really didn't have it. So when he's going, I'd rather dream about Padme. I'm like, God, that's so awkward.
I hate sand.
But I was, gets everywhere. I really loved it. I was obsessed with it. I love the love theme, the music to it. And, I mean, I still really enjoy it when I watch it now. There's still things like continuity issues and stuff that I don't like all that much, but I just try and ignore them so I can enjoy the movie. What I didn't really think was necessary was giving Boba Fett a dad that, and the dad is the reason why the clone troopers were made and all of that. I didn't think it was really necessary. I think, yeah, we needed to see the Clone Wars to see what the hell that was, but I definitely would have done it a lot different.
And don't forget, Marcy, I have met Jango Fett himself, Temuera Morrison, at a convention.
You did, and he asked you to cook some fucking eggs.
I did. He said, cook me some fucking eggs, so... And funnily enough, I forgot to mention this when we talked to Phantom Menace. We also met Ray Park, who played Darth Maul as well.
We did, and he's awesome.
Yeah, so I pretty much met nearly everyone from somebody from each of the prequels so far. So that's cool. I continue.
Where was I going with that? So completely obsessed when I saw it. Not as obsessed now, but I really enjoy watching it still. And again, there's a lot of ways I would have done it and handled it, but it is what it is, and there's a lot of really good action in it. I mean, it's so watching it in this when I saw the cinemas and just thinking it was so ridiculous that like 3PO just gets dragged in the middle of the action with the robe with the droids and shit. I'm like, what the hell?
Although I had to laugh.
Again, you realize it's comedy service for the kids.
Yeah. And I had to laugh at the point. It's like he's shooting, like, when his head's on that arm.
What am I doing?
It's like, die, rebels, die, Jedi scum. What the hell am I saying? I love that part.
Yeah, it's still funny. It was just like, what the hell? Yep. But yeah, no, it's enjoyable. It is what it is. There's good and bad things about it.
Yep.
And Christopher. Darth Christopher.
Look, I loved this film. I knew, again, this was before the internet still for me. So my information, there was probably only three memories I have of knowing about when this film was coming out, and that was discovering the title, which I mentioned earlier. It's like, it's not the greatest title, like Attack of the Clones. It's like, oh, okay.
That one should have, like, no matter what, it should have been The Clone
Wars. Yeah, but it's like, oh, and Honest Trailers made a comment on this recently. It's like, they don't really attack anyone, but... It's, you know, I was like, oh, that's cool. It's a new title. The other one was the casting of Hayden Christensen, and I remembered seeing him on the cover of a magazine holding Darth Vader's helmet. I'm like, ooh, he's cool. And the other one was just closer to the build-up. I was seeing the Fellowship of the Ring, and I remember seeing the very first teaser poster with Anakin and Padme, thinking, oh, wow, and then all of a sudden the trailer for it happened, and I'm like, woo! I think I was more excited about that than The Lord of the Rings, but then Sean Bean broke my heart. But look, this movie is a little bit more special for me in a way, because when it came out in May of 2002, the month before, my world had been turned upside down with a gigantic move. My mother decided to move me and my brothers from rural New South Wales up in the Highlands all the way down to the south coast of New South Wales. And it was a devastating thing for me. You know, I'd lost my Star Wars buddies and I basically was dropped in a school that mocked me for being a fan. I mean, at the time, I kind of had a little Jedi braid like Obi-Wan in The Phantom Menace at the time, minus the little ponytail, but I had the little braid on the side thing. And I was very, very proud of it and very like, I'm a Jedi, da-da-da-da-da. But luckily enough, I was able to find a friend that loved it as much as I did. And we ended up seeing it at the Nera cinema on opening weekend. And like when I saw The Phantom Menace in Armidale, it was just packed. It was packed with people. We were, there was a line going out the door. And I loved it. I mean, I felt like I was in the cinema for 6 hours watching this, you know, but the beginning was so quick to get through to its point. And then that finale just felt like it was going on forever, which was a good thing in my books, because it's like, oh my God, this is so cool. This is the beginning of the Clone War. They mentioned it in the other, oh God, this is how the war happens and this and that. And it was also one of those first times when, you know, they changed something about a character, which is Yoda. You know, they made the drastic decision from going from puppet to CGI. And I just sat there, even though I'd seen a picture of what he looked like. And I'm just like, even in my brain, I'm like, how is he going to move? Like, what's he going to do? You know, oh, how's he going to move? How is he going to do this? Even though I'd seen Jar Jar, and at the time not knowing that was a mocap character, not fully aware that it was a mocap character. I knew it wore a suit and all that. But this was, I was just like totally blown away by how they brought Yoda to life. And I think it was a very good move. It was a very good move because, you know, these films, you know, a lot of people complain about these films being more about the style and the visuals effects, but it was a very smart move because, again, what they did with Yoda, you know, busting him out in that lightsaber battle right at the end. But I loved this film. I'll admit the lightsaber battle at the end between Anakin and Dooku isn't the greatest, specifically the way it's shot, but it has some really cool moments when they're in the dark there and all you see is the blades. But it luckily it was saved by Yoda just coming in and kicking ass, and everyone just lost their shit when that happened. But again, I just didn't, you know, I was in my own little bubble of, you know, this is a Star Wars movie, I love it. And it was soon after that I knew people didn't like it. It still befuddles me why, but over time I can sit there and I can say, you know, yeah, look, this one's probably my least favourite of all six films, but I still have such respect for it. But again, its flaws is with that dialogue and that romance. It's just so clunky, and the fact that, you know, and again, it's not Hayden Christensen's fault for that. Over time, I sit there and I listen to his dialogue and I see his facial expressions and I'm like, wow, this guy's a stalker, man. And it's such a shame to sit there and think that. It's like, oh, no. It's like, you know, the things he says, I'd rather dream about Padme, you know, and he's there touching her. And the way he says, oh, sorry, my lady, in one scene, and just the way he looks off camera at her, and it's like,
He's basically Edward Cullen in this movie.
Don't even bring that in here. But it's such a shame that gets there. And again, that's the fault of the fucking fanboys for creating that. And it's such a shame because, you know, again, it's just that clunky dialogue and that, oh God. And it just amazes me that, oh, she actually does love him in the end. Cause there's no hint throughout it that these two characters can meld so well with the way they did it. And it's just like, ah, no, she's kissing him. But it's still like, oh, yes, it's confirmed. She's going to be Luke and Leia's mother. even though I knew that in episode one and no one believed me, so ha ha ha. But the other thing I have a problem with this film was the fact, look, I've got nothing against Jango Fett. I loved that they brought Jango Fett in it and they did bring Boba back. But the thing, the fact that he is, over time, I'm just like, yeah, whatever. But I think even back when I saw it, it's like, ooh, he's a clone. And it's just like, he's, it's just the same character again. And it's like, it doesn't bother me so much, but it's just something, even when I first saw this, was like, I don't know if that really works. It wasn't necessary, but it's just that, oh, we have to explain everything, which is any prequel film's biggest flaw, is the fact that they have to over-explain and give everyone a backstory. Like in episode one, you know, 3PO had to have a backstory, and that backstory was that he was created by Anakin, and it's like, you know, Boba Fett's backstory is that he was a clone, and it's like, But, look, great film, great effects. What I loved about the build-up for this one was that it really gave some excellent, and I give credit to the visual dictionary for this that came with the film. It gave some really good tips on lightsaber battling techniques, like how to parry and, you know, thrusting and the different types of sabers and that. And I just really relished in that, as well as my obsession with Count Dooku's lightsaber. So cool in its design. But no, look, again, it's probably my least favorite, but I still love it. And I think it's an enjoyable film. I mean, again, the score for this one is just tip top. You know, the Across the Stars love theme is really, really good.
I'm disappointed they didn't give a whole backstory and character arc to Bosk.
Maybe that's one of the spin-offs.
He needs his own movie, and I need to write and direct it.
Well,
and Chris can play Bosk.
That's probably going to be in one of the spin-off films.
And we're going to call
the ones, the Bounty Hunter film.
We're going to call it Like a Bosk.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby. anyway. Let's get to Revenge of the Sith, not Revenge of the Fallen. my brain. I don't brain today. I has the dumb. This was my very first midnight screening, and I saw it 2 days before
the rest of the world,
yeah. I fucking loved it. The one thing when I saw it, the one thing I didn't like, aside from continuity, was Vader's "No!" I'm like, oh, really? You just ruined the movie. But I thought this was fucking badass awesome. And I still think it's fucking awesome. There's a lot of great stuff in it. A lot of really good stuff, I think, was handled. I think it's the best conclusion we could have hoped for. We got to see that really emotional, epic final battle where Anakin, you know, gets so, you know, destroyed all over that he has to be Darth Vader in that suit. It's not a kids' movie either. They really sort of made it a lot more adult in a lot of ways. There are some stupid things that I hate, like she died of a broken heart and all that shit.
She's lost the will to live.
Yeah, that's just dumb. I wouldn't have had that at all. So I remember watching her going, how can that happen? Leia remembers her real mother. That's why they had Leia born with her eyes open and Luke with his eyes closed. If you noticed, that's why.
She must have an amazing memory as a baby.
Apparently, it's just,
yeah, but that's, I like to think of that, that's her force power just telling her.
It could be, you
know. That's a good point. That's a good point.
The force sense is kicking in there.
I mean, that's fine, but yeah, still.
That blew your mind.
Yeah, but still stupid. but I still think it's an epic movie. It's a lot of fun to watch. I think Hayden definitely improves with this one because I think the dialogue and what he's given is a lot better. And, yeah, tries to wrap things up as best they can. But, again, I would have had this as the movie where he does go falls in with the dark side and stuff, but I definitely would have handled it a lot different. And I think we can say one of the best things about all three movies is Palpatine.
Oh, yeah.
He's pretty awesome.
Ian McDiarmid, you
something,
are...
Something dark side.
Ian McDiarmid, you are a genius. If you ever listen to this, my friend...
Yeah, I'll send it to him right now, because we're BFF.
From what you did in Return of the Jedi, and in particularly the prequels, your performance is just on par. Even as Palpatine, as a senator, my fellow, you stole these films. And thank you.
I'm going to send it to him right now. Yeah, it's not a lot, like, I can really say, because I feel like I've talked about it a lot in my life. But, again, even though I was a lot older... when I saw this, I was still collecting stuff from it. I remember treasuring my Wookiee figures that I got. I kept one in the box, one out of the box, and I gave one to Chris to open. So I'm like, why the fuck does it need to be in the box? You can still buy these. And it's so much more fun playing with them. And yeah, it was pretty cool to see the Wookiee homeworld and that stuff. And Yoda is a friend to the Wookiees.
Sorry. that's sorry. For our listeners who don't get, that's a reference to, I guess, the video of Chewbacca being dubbed over by Peter Griffin's laugh in a recent video. So, anyways, continue, Marcy.
I would say these are my favorite of the three. I'd probably put the other two kind of on par, but I think this one is pretty damn good. B, you can... Chris, we don't go with you first because you go on too much.
Yeah, and I'll probably get upset when I start talking. But
quiet, you.
Yeah, pretty much, again, it's Star Wars. I'm automatically excited. And I didn't get a chance to finish... Revenge of the Sith in time for this podcast, unfortunately. So, but from what I've seen, like from my recent rewatch, but I did watch this one a ton a lot when it first came out, because I knew automatically that, like, even though I knew that the first, like, Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, while were fine, were still solid, but were very flawed films, this one I did it, like, it does have its little flaws, but to me, this, it was like, just like, nearly on par with the original trilogy, in particularly The Empire Strikes Back, in that I feel like everything, like most of the problems that the previous two films had, I think this one, like George Lucas actually fixed. Like I felt like a lot of the performances this time were much better. Hayden Christensen, I definitely thought, gave a really good performance this time around. Like he'll have the occasional wooden line here and there, but for me, I think, because he had a lot more to work with in terms of where his character goes. In this one, he gave a much more compelling performance. And I will say this, though, and like I know a lot of people sort of don't like him in these films, but to me, like I can agree to an extent that sometimes his line delivery can come across as wooden. But one thing I have to agree, and this was something that I didn't even think about until I saw an episode last year of The Nostalgia Critic, when he's actually sort of not delivering lines, when he's just like sort of sitting there, like he actually gives a really good performance with his body language and his facial expressions. Like he can give off sort of what his character's thinking and what he's going through just in his, like from a physical standpoint, when he's not sort of delivering dialogue, like there are moments in this film where he's actually, when he's starting to go towards the dark side, he's actually legitimately frightening. Like, sort of looks he gives
well,
there.
Well, he kills
and...
a whole bunch of little kids. So,
yeah. Well, to be fair, well, yeah, that and, you know, as we saw in Attack of the Clones, he has no problem killing kids, let's just say that.
He really doesn't like the Tusken Raiders.
Yeah, he just doesn't like kids, full stop.
To hide his twins, because it's like, oh geez, he's gonna lightsaber him to death.
Exactly. And also, like, Ewan McGregor's great in this one. To me, this one has sort of the more sort of dramatic heft of the prequels. Even probably, like I said, I think Empire Strikes Back is a good comparison to this one because it has that sort of dramatic sort of story. Like there are a lot of stuff is escalating in terms of plot, and there are things that, and it's also a very emotionally charged film as well. And like, even though you know how it's going to end, it's just that journey getting there. It's just so thrilling and so riveting. And like, again, the sort of the big sort of climactic sequence, like sort of the lightsaber battle between Obi-Wan and Anakin, is just so thrilling. And it's just so fucking good. And also one of my favorite moments in the entire series. And this was the moment where I was up to before I came on the episode. Before we started recording this episode, is the scene where Anakin is with Palpatine at the opera. That scene is fantastic, and that's probably some of the best writing in the entire prequel trilogy, because it's the sort of the way how he sort of like slowly kind of seduces Anakin to the dark side, while also it's basically kind of telling his origin story in a way of he's just telling this sort of fairy tale, this legend to Anakin. Is so good. It's just fantastic. And like I said, it's thrilling. It's dark. It's just a fantastic like Star Wars film, and just the perfect way to sort of end the trilogy on. And to me, it's definitely just a great film, and I can legitimately say that. I know some people, I remember when this came out, critics and fans loved it, and it's a lot of people sort of more or less on it now, which is, I think, is kind of even bizarre, because I can get that with Phantom Menace and Attack of Clones, but I just don't get it with Revenge of the Sith, because it's just pretty damn great. Like, it's a great movie, and I can legitimately, and I'm seriously saying that, I think it's a great film, and it's just awesome, and I still love it to this day. So, to me, best of the prequels, and definitely up there as one of the best of the entire series. And that's all for me. So, go ahead, Chris.
I don't recall a film emotionally ruining me as much as this film did, and I mean that in a very, very good way, because I loved it. Revenge of the Sith so much. I remember I saw this opening weekend, and this movie is very, very special. I mean, I actually saw this with someone that loved Star Wars. I mean, they'd only really known Star Wars fairly and not as long as me, but they you know, they'd watched the originals and had watched the prequels a little bit more. So, you know, this was my first girlfriend at the time, and this was our first sort of date. And the fact that we're both in there just so on edge, on so, you know, goosebumps from this film, it was just, it was one of the best cinema experiences I had. And the closest I've ever come to that, again, was this year with Jurassic World. But from the moment you see the lone battle cruiser gliding across above Coruscant, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, these two space starfighters just come out of nowhere, and the music flares, and then all of a sudden, bang, you're in the middle of this gigantic space battle. And I'm just like, whoa, I literally jumped in my seat. I'm like, this is so cool. So again, for me, this was my 1977 of watching the Star Destroyer just scream across the screen all over again. And I was just like, whoa, this is so awesome. And it's so cool. And this movie was just so emotionally charged, so dark. I had goosebumps throughout the whole thing. You know, again, it did improve upon the original, you know, the other two films that had come before it. This one is closer, and it acts as a nice, it's got a lot more in common with the original trilogy, because there's, you know, a lot of set pieces, a lot of designs that look very similar to what was to come in, you know, episode 4. And there's a lot of dialogue and very similar stuff, and you can start to see the evolution of what to come. And, you know, even though there was probably a 20-year gap in between the two films, you can see that. And I always just found it so amazing watching how Palpatine manipulates Anakin. And it's a very, you know, a lot of people, again, would probably have hoped for it to happen a lot longer. But like you described, that one scene of in the opera of him just bringing him over is just so cool to watch. And again, credit goes to Ian McDiarmid for his phenomenal performance as Palpatine. And again, by the time we finally see him with the makeup on and that look that we all know and love for the Emperor, with that voice, is just amazing. And I love to see the evolution of the Empire just almost coming in overnight. So it's almost kind of like the Knight of Knives back when Hitler eradicated with the SS, they eradicated the brown shirts in one night. And just that's what I see the rise of the Empire was, you know, almost overnight with Order 66 and the execution of all the Jedi. I bawled my eyes out through that sequence because the music was just so, and just like, whoa, my heart was just torn out. The music in this film is just phenomenal. And the final duel is definitely one of my all-time favorite duels. And of all the things George envisioned for this trilogy, this is one of the things he nailed on the head. He wanted you to go to hell and watch these two friends fight it out in one of the most horrible places imaginable. And we got that with the fight on Mustafar. I mean, it's a very long battle, but it's emotionally charged. It's edited very well with the conflict between Palpatine and Yoda in their own personal fight. But you get what you wanted, and to watch Anakin wither in pain on the ground as he's been burnt alive is just harrowing. And the fact that he's there screaming at Obi-Wan, you know, filled with so much hate, it just gutted me. This film, at the time, I was so happy. Even if they never made any more, I was so happy for this to be a final film, because it does come full circle in a way by, you know, the final shot of bringing Luke to Tatooine to live with Owen and Beru. And that fight, recreating the binary sunset shot on Tatooine as they look out to a new horizon is just a great way to end the films. And this one was just so good, so well done. Yeah, it was just top notch. And like I said, it just ruined me emotionally. Afterwards, just coming out with tears still streaming from my eyes. Watched it a couple more times at the cinema, and I still have great respect for it. I mean, it's a person, again, like with Jedi, it's a personal favorite, because it's so much darker, so much, and so much raw emotion in there as well. You know, it's still got some flaws with the dialogue and a few acting choices, but, you know, that was to be expected, but, you know, it's just so, so good. And,
And that's it. And that is, that concludes our discussion of the prequels. And I guess next time you'll hear from us, we'll be discussing episode 7, The Force Awakens.
But Marcy, I thought we were going to be discussing the Ewok movies, man.
No, we're going to discuss right now in depth the Star Wars Christmas special.
Dad's right, because that's the best one, y'all.
Actually, that's the first one that officially had Boba Fett.
Well, technically, the A New Hope did, but he was cut out of the movie, so...
They added him in the special editions.
Oh, okay.
He was never in that scene originally.
Oh.
It's actually, when Han talks to Jabba,
yep.
There's actually a fat guy wearing fur.
Oh, okay.
That's what Jabba originally looked like, was a fat guy wearing fur. Just, like,
turned him into a slug.
And then he got turned into a slug. So, no, the Christmas special is the first appearance of Boba Fett.
Awesome.
Yeah, so and take that.
And then we have to talk about the Ewok TV show, and then also the Droids TV show. We have so many to talk about, Marty.
I think, to be honest, the less said about the Clone Wars, I think the better, because I think whilst that show had some great moments, I mean, I never really watched it, but that movie they had was terrible. I was the only person in the cinema when I saw that. I mean, I didn't see that in a big cinema complex. I only saw that at the local one in Nara, but it just failed so badly. It should have been a telly movie. But again,
I think it was. Wasn't it originally made for TV?
It was, but they put it in cinema. But the problem is, it was just really copying the prequels in a way. You know, it's like, we're following the exact same characters. You're not offering anything new. When you're retelling when you're telling a new Star Wars story, you want to focus on other characters. And that's why Rebels is such a better show. Because, because, you know, it's telling the story of new characters. It's telling, you know, it's just a different focus entirely. Clone Wars could have been a lot better than it was. But the problem is, we already know, you know, it's like, makes sense as much as doing a Han Solo movie, which unfortunately they are going to do. We already know enough about Han Solo that we don't need a solo film. We didn't need a TV series based on guys that we were watching in a film, and it just kind of killed the effect on the movies a little bit, because we got, you know, too much of them when it should have been on our level. But
however, the TV show does include Bosk.
Rebels does. Oh, sorry, yes, no, Clone Wars, Bosk was in it, and that's the only reason you love it. But one of the great things about the Clone Wars was it did have Darth Maul. They ruined Darth Maul, in my respect, in bringing him back to life. But it did have a lot of characters from the comic books and that the extended universe created that they brought into it, like Asha Ventress. She was really cool, and certain clone characters that have returned in Rebels, but Rebels is a stronger one because it's telling a story. It's not telling, you know, oh, documented events, so here's a battle, here's some lame-ass random adventure. And that's why I think Rebels is stronger, because it's doing a classic Star Wars thing, focusing on a small bunch of people and telling their story in a way. So, yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, I was going to say, Marcy, we need to go in depth on Spaceballs, because that's the greatest Star Wars movie of all time, even though it's not really a Star Wars movie.
And we can just talk about the Family Guy ones and the Robot Chicken ones.
Exactly.
Yeah, but no. I think that's it from us. It's getting past all our bedtimes. So, yeah, so you'll next hear from us. It'll be all about The Force Awakens.
Yep.
So, yeah, tune back in for that. And, yeah, just naturally you can just find us on supermarcy.com. Yeah, that's how I'm ending this podcast.
Pretty much. But yeah. Where can people find you on the internet this week, Marcy?
Supermarcy.com, even though I haven't written a lot lately, but hopefully I will be able to. Come the new year, you can just follow my Twitter at twitter.com/supermarcy and like us on Facebook, facebook.com/sm.com/superpodcast.
Cool. And what about you, Chris? Where can people find you on the internet this week?
You probably won't find me much on the internet this week other than just the odd update on my Facebook page, which every day I've been putting up an image from the new film, just a little blur. But yeah, no, I will be switching off. I know nothing will come of it in terms of spoilers, but I'm just avoiding. I'll just be sitting here building and playing with my Star Wars Legos.
Cool. You can find me at my Twitter page at twitter.com/Bejamine, or my Facebook page at facebook.com/Bejamine, or my fan page at facebook.com/TerribleAussie. And of course, you can find my weekly writings at supermarcy.com. And also, we can't forget about doing this, Marcy. You can also check out our really funny film-related Twitter account at Awkward Film Pauses at Awkward Pauses 1 on Twitter.
That is correct.
Yes. So you can see all of our funny sort of moments from films when we just sort of randomly pause a film at a certain moment, and if there's something funny that happens on screen, we take a photo and we post it online.
And there's quite a few of The Room.
Yes, because that movie was just made for our Twitter account.
Yeah, it really was. yeah, so we'll catch you later this week, everybody.
See you, everyone.
May the force be with you.
Always.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.